This is Iconic.
Welcome to Iconic, where we talk about all things 13th Age. I'm your host, JM, and with me as always are Nick, Becca, and Mark.
Hey.
Hello.
Howdy.
We have a great show for you this week. We are talking about a recent game that we got to play in where we were all a alternate party in the official Pellegrine Press Twitch 13th Age game that they stream every Monday night. If you have been following the last 2 weeks, the last two episodes, we've been talking about that interview that we had with Cody and his players, and we actually got to play in that game. So we thought it would be fun to take a bit of time to talk about the game, our experience, and what we took away as players, because rarely, if ever, have all of us got to play in the group at the same time. I think in general, one of us is always the GM and the other people are players. So it was a unique experience for us to find it. We're going to put the link to the Pellegrine Press Twitch channel and in the show notes. And so let's just start with kind of an overview. Do one of you guys want to give an overview of the game, just high level, what happened in our one shot?
Sure. So we were invited to join Cody's and Company's game, and we were a group of adventurers who were seeking to free the Crusader from the abyss, the hell that he had been sent to by the core adventuring group for Cody's game. For the Pellegrine game. So yeah, we were level 5 characters sent to rescue the Crusader. And we ended up going up against 3 arc demons. And we were apparently stuck in this kind of a battle royale game that had been created by the demons. And we won.
Well, Becca won.
Is how I'm viewing it.
We succeeded at our goal, which is always, like, whether I live or die in a game is always most important to me, is if we succeeded at our goal, even if the cost of that goal was 1, 2, 3 of the party members out of 4, I feel like that was a good ending, if that makes sense. So I got the chance to play a fighter. And if you know anything about JM, I love playing half our high elf fighters, and I never get to play one. And so I got to play a high elf fighter. It was a ton of fun. I actually got some of the magic items from the Book of Loot that I was able to pull up from. There's a demon writhing weapon in Book of Loot that forces, if you hit a demon with a natural 16 plus, you can force them to reroll their random demonic ability. And that was just a lot of fun. What did you guys play? Why don't you, in case people hadn't tuned into the episode, what did you guys end up playing?
So I played Nigel, the halfling sorcerer, and his one unique thing was he was the last true son of the white, because, you know, here at Iconic, we have a special place for the white.
We do indeed.
And he was, you know, as a typical sorcerer, he was a heavy hitter, and unfortunately, once they started to target him, he went down pretty quick, but it took him a few rounds to figure that out. They had a different target, and we'll let him talk about that.
We did our darndest to keep you.
Yeah, you did. I will say that JM and Nick tried their darndest to not let them target me, because not only with the archdemons, but there was a lot of the mooks running around, which were just a pain, as mooks are supposed to be. Yeah, it was fun. I don't normally play a sorcerer or a wizard, and being able to load up on big, heavy spells was a lot of fun.
Yeah, I played Riobard, a human paladin, whose one unique thing was he was the only human to have been made an honorary dwarf. It was interesting, as we went into the arena, we all kind of had to do this montage of how we got there. But then Cody turned it around to the other players and kind of, not necessarily a montage, but engaged them in discussion about what is it about humans that their particular demon doesn't like. And I was the only human in the party. And so there was kind of this natural ganging up that happened, but I was building my character from wanting to play it as a tank. So it worked out well. I had thought that I'd be doing a balance of hitting hard with my standard actions and then healing with my quick actions. In retrospect, I didn't really do either well. I should have just done like full on hitting, or probably more like the full on healing, but it was a lot of fun to play.
We did discover that Nick's characters usually always get mind controlled in games. And he was like, why do you think that is? I'm like, I don't know. But at this point, if you're not taking things that up your ability to resist mind control, that's really on you. That's not a GM problem.
Yeah, for a while I was going through a stint where I kept losing limbs, and I'm currently on a stint where I keep getting confused. So I hit hard, but to the wrong party.
And what about you, Beck?
I play Jama, the dark elf monk. I love playing monks. They're the best. My one unique thing was that I was prophesied to save the Crusader, and then I got stuck fighting a lot of mooks over in the corner, and everyone else was teleporting around the battlefield. It took me a while to get out of the mook suck that I was stuck in. So, yeah, I didn't feel as helpful as perhaps I could have been.
It is interesting that your one unique thing was that you're prophesied to save the Crusader, and you were the one who actually saved the Crusader. I thought that was a really, really cool tie.
Yeah, it was awesome.
Yeah, as we have kind of alluded to, I say we won because, yes, my character did get the Crusader out of the hell pit that we were in, and I lost everybody else in my group to it. They all went down, and last person standing, I grabbed the Crusader and ran away. And so, yeah, because of my one unique thing, being the one to prophesize to save the Crusader, I kind of leaned into the whole, well, I'm here for one job and one job only. You guys are great, but we got to get him out.
And truth be told, you're a dark elf, so
yeah.
You don't really care about your other party members.
No.
Way to play
it. Although, I need everybody to know that it was discussed on Discord while the game was playing, and we all agreed that I was going to abandon everybody.
Well, we agreed that We were going to abandon everyone at the end of the round, whoever was still standing. And it just so happened that you were the only one left standing.
Yes.
So I guess I should share my one unique thing. My character, Alandarian, was the firstborn of the Crusader and the Elf Queen, conceived under a blood moon during a dark elf gala. So that didn't come up as much. But we got to use our backgrounds, I feel like, really, really well. There were some really interesting moments where we were like, well, we don't like this scenario. It's been stacked against us. So we're going to change the rules of the game. And then Cody's normal players each were given demons to control. And at the end of the episode, you should check it out because it was really interesting to me to hear 13th Age players discuss what it was like to play 13th Age monsters against another group. What was your favorite moment of this iconic group coming together for the first time as players? Like, again, I've said, this was the first time that all four of us were on the same side of the DM screen, virtual or not. What was your favorite moment of this adventure?
I think for me, it was the actual, I guess, releasing and healing of the Crusader. It was bringing the Crusader into the fight. It used a combination of magic items and icon relationships to not just one person, but a couple of us were doing this, actually kind of releasing him from the net that he was trapped under and then giving him enough of a healing stamina to actually get up and engage in the fight. And when he first swung and hit and dropped a demon, I thought, yeah, that was a good choice on our part to get him into the fight.
Yes, it was. Like I said, I played a sorcerer, and for some reason, I think I went fairly early in the initiative, and they were all playing these big demons. And if you watched it, it has a Doom flavor. So okay, the big one that had these cannons for arms, that one needs to go down. So I unleashed Breath of the Black, and I critted on my first attack roll. That was so awesome. However, I did 90 points, and it didn't even stagger the demon, and in my head I'm like, oh, this is gonna be a long night, because it came close, but it didn't stagger it. I'm like, oh, that doesn't bode well as fifth level characters, because that would have taken me out of the game completely. But that was, and I want to say, I think I critted like three times that night. That was just, didn't get to use the breath a lot, but when I did, it seemed to be like, hey, natural 20, which is pretty awesome.
Yeah, Cody had told us going into this that this was a double strength fight, but actually seeing that much damage be dealt and have it not actually take one out, it made that statement a whole lot more real than when he had just said it.
What about you, Becca? What was your favorite moment?
Well, I really enjoyed being able to use my different monk abilities to dodge damage. Yeah, it was at the end of the game when I bamfed out with the Crusader. I was not quite staggered yet, and everybody else was down. So it was really fun to dodge all those attacks and stay upright. I love you guys.
Yeah, you did have at one point, you had like four enemies, some mooks, mm-hmm. and one of those floaty heads wasn't a mook. But yeah, you had multiples, and being able to dodge, I think, allowed you to be the last one. And it occupied a good third of the foes on the battlefield.
Yeah.
Which helped.
Yeah. So, yeah. And then, you know, winning the game. That was fun.
Winning the game was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed, like, my favorite moments were all of the little things that weren't necessarily seen on screen when we are, like, heavily strategizing on Discord because we're like, okay, what do we have to do? Nick, there was this one moment where Nick's character was confused and he was engaged with both my character and Mark's character, and Mark and I are chatting on Discord. I'm like, can you teleport away? He's like, I totally can if this thing goes off. I'm like, well, then you go first, and if you teleport away, I'll teleport away, and then at least he has to spend his turn in getting back engaged with us. And I was able to use, again, I love the intercept rules in 13th Age, and the fighter gets skilled intercept, and I built took a lot of my talents around using skilled intercept, and so I was able to pop free and engage and move around. It was a lot of fun to just kind of see that. Now, we all run 13th Age, and in a lot of ways, the show tends to be very directed at 13th Age GMs. So one of the things I thought would be fun to talk about is, what was our big takeaway as players that we would want to see incorporated into our games, or that we would want to include going forward on this? I know one of the things for me is Cody did a really great job at the end of the session asking everyone, hey, what is one element from today's session that you want to see come back in the next session? And I know that's in the rule book, but I've never actually continually ended each session like that. I feel like Cody does a great job with that. And also, I was talking with Becca about how my goal for this year is every year I pick one thing that I want to really work on for the year with my GMing. Like, what's something that I want to work on? And it's making my battlefields more dynamic and interactive. And Cody did that. He had lava pits that you couldn't cross. He had different pylons and things that you could interact with. And it was a lot of fun to see all of that kind of come together. So what about Nick? What about you?
Well, I had mentioned this as part of that debrief time that we did with Cody. But I liked the inclusion of those boons that could be activated, those pylons that you referred to as being part of the terrain. It's probably not something that I would want to put in there for every combat or every, you know, fight. But if something like that was there in maybe a third or a fourth of the combats at a run, I think it'd be really welcome by the players and get them to start paying more attention to the terrain. The initial temptation going into this particular fight, because I mean, the rules of the fight were really simple. If you win the combat, we get to leave with a Crusader. And so it just ends up becoming this, conceptually, just set them up and knock them down. You know, just go toe to toe with them and see whoever, you know, emerges victorious. But the fact that there were those pylons around on the map for us to engage with, it kind of made us, or I don't know, it made me want to be a little bit more strategic in what we were doing. And once we actually started seeing what those boons were, there is certainly more of a desire to actually get to there and activate them. The other thing that it didn't come up so much in his game other than the first couple of rounds that I liked that he did was that he gave a +2 attack bonus for describing the attack well. Mm-hmm. So that you're not just saying, oh, I hit, go, you know, hit them with my sword, but if you're actually describing it, then you get a mechanical bonus for doing that. And like I said, it didn't come up so much in the game, but it was something that he did mention that I liked.
He was, if you described it and then you missed and go, whoa, can I get that +2? He was usually pretty good about going, oh, well, yeah, in that case, you definitely got it.
Not really a takeaway. One of the things I thought was really unique. Yeah, I guess it was a takeaway. Don't know how I would put it into my game or how you could do it a lot. But what was really different was, and we've all run games and played in games. When you're the GM, it's you either off the cuff figuring out what the enemy is doing, or you might kind of plan out, here's their tactics in general for what's going on. In this fight, the four of us were going against four players who had completely different ideas. And then Cody was running the minions and doing some things, the mooks. So there was, and it's almost too easy when you're the GM going, okay, this monster is going to hit Nick. And then this one goes next. Okay, this one's going to hit Nick. And I can plan the power pile driver just to take the paladin out. Or Cody had no control over, which makes sense for this fight because they were demons.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they stomp on you this round and, oh, look, shiny. Let me go get the mook. And just changing, which demons do. And that was very unique. And from our part, I noticed it was hard to plan what really to do because you weren't sure what all the demons were going to do.
Right.
And we were able very, to... very unique. And I like that. That was definitely something that threw a twist. And that might be something, you know, if you have a regular game of and you have enough friends, you know, okay, here's the boss fight. Hey, Jay and Nick, why don't you come run a couple of monsters for this fight? Here's what they are. You have free reign to do whatever. And that whole big wrench into the PC's plans of, oh, crap, I've got multiple minds and I don't know what their strategy is. So that was kind of cool. I like that.
Yeah, I think when Cody was asking what we thought, that was one of the things that really stood out to me, because we were also able to antagonize the players to get them to come in and attack us. And if you watch that episode, you will see exactly what we are talking about. Becca, what about you?
It was a really fun game to play in. And part of that was like having the other players be the monsters, not just the GM, and then the interactive battle map. And yeah, JM and I have talked about his goal of having more interactive battle maps this coming year. And I know I would like to do that as well for several of my games. It was cool to see Cody using tables and random rolls. And so then it wasn't just necessarily the battlefield of doom, but on one of the rounds, we actually all got a heal up, which was nice because some people were already down, unconscious. And so they came back and we were able to keep going, it felt like. So it was cool to be in a random interactive battle map instead of just one that's like, well, you're going to die every single time you take a step forward. I enjoyed it.
Now, one of the interesting things for us was that, so we like, when we play virtually, we like seeing everybody. And a lot of times we'll do theater of the mind just so that we can see everyone as we're playing. Cody runs his game. Now, you may know Cody from our episodes on Foundry, because Cody is works for Foundry now and is one of the people who is doing a lot of the work for 13th Age. He uses only Foundry and then audio only. So you can hear everyone, but you can't really see them. But he has Foundry. I feel like he has Foundry running on like a next level for 13th Age. Now,
agreed.
I did like there are some things I still prefer about Fantasy Grounds, like the fact that even if you target the creature, you've got to apply the damage, you know, or when you get targeted, you have to apply the damage if it hits. There's something to be said for that. I liked because you were able to say, oh, well, I'm going to use this power that reduces, you know, I take half damage from it. Or, oh, did you take this into account? So it may not be, you know, it may be a miss. So the extra step is okay. That was about the one thing that kind of stood out to my mind as being a little bit more fiddly, I'd say about 80% of the time, except for those corner cases where you were able to activate something and take half or no damage. I really liked it in that moment. Every other time I was like, ah, this is the worst. And then I think of when we're playing on Fantasy Grounds and it's the opposite, where 80% of the time it works smoothly. And then it's like, oh, right, Mark's raging and should take half damage. Or Nick is mind controlled. Yeah, that's another game where you get just mind controlled like all the time. But I really enjoyed the Foundry experience with Cody having all of his add-ons. They were working smoothly. The character sheets were great. We got a lot of interaction with the dice. He was able to walk us through. Like, every foundry should just come with like a Kodi tutorial. But we've talked a lot about Foundry, and I know Nick and Mark, you and Becca, you use it a lot for the Dark Cut game. What were your thoughts on the Foundry experience using the 13th Age rule set while we were doing all of this?
So for myself, it was one of those moments where we had Kodi come on and talk to us about Foundry in one of our podcasts previously this season. And so to be able to play the game with him, someone who knows it so well, it was so smooth and so easy, like you were saying. And I felt like a lot of the things that I had trouble with on my own were fixed or explained. And so I can go back and go, okay, so I had these problems with Foundry before, and now I feel like they're solved or it's better. And I'm more willing to really look into using this for my own games.
It sold me on actually shelling out money, and I bought Cubicle 7 at a bundle to get the Warhammer Fantasy Core Rules, the starter box, and the first adventure anthology pretty steeply discounted. And after watching how great it ran for Kodi, I picked it up, and I've been very impressed with the Warhammer Fantasy side of things. Yeah, I think it was overall a very positive experience for me. I think we all had to build our magic items. And what, like, we were able to talk amongst ourselves, and because the framework was in there, it was ridiculously easy. It was far easier to add a magic item in Foundry than it was to add a magic item in Fantasy Grounds. It was really just add an item, tick what it applied to, tick its bonus, add in its quirk, hit OK, and you were done. Nick and Mark, what were your thoughts on that?
Well, you know, as we talked, I played 13th Age on a couple of different virtual tabletop systems, and I've really come to appreciate the way that Foundry handles the flexibility of the 13th Age system, because the 13th Age system, it's not easy to code for. It just isn't, because there's so many niche cases where this time, you know, like you were talking already, James, the in this situation, it's going to be, the damage is going to be halved, or this situation, you got ongoing damage and regular damage, and then the next time you're going to be getting double damage. You know, there's a lot of fiddly bits that it's really, really hard to code for. And the way that the Foundry system handles all of that, I think it's in line with how 13th Age, the feel of 13th Age. You mentioned that things like applying damage is handled with user interaction rather than just coding it into the powers themselves. And so as a player, you have to manually click that step to apply it appropriately to your sheet. And I was thinking that that's really the same way it's done if you're sitting at a table, right? Yes, the Foundry system does automate a lot of the stuff, but the actual getting it into your character sheet is still done manually. And the fact that the player is actively engaged in receiving those damage or that heal to their character sheet, it works. I like it. And I even prior to this session, but cemented having played this session, the next time I'm running 13th Age Online, it's going to be using Foundry.
Yeah, I like it a lot. I mean, it definitely speeds up. If you've never done an online a game using Fantasy Grounds or Foundry or Roll20, whatever it is, it does speed up. Instead of rolling to hit and then, okay, rolling, especially in 13th Age, where at fifth level you're rolling multiple dice for damage and all that, it's nice that it's all there. And I like the fact that the player has to accept the damage to apply it, because, mm-hmm. as you said, there's so many things in 13th Age to mitigate that. Like one time somebody hit me for a lot, and I'm like, you know what? I'm a halfling, evasive, make that attack roll again at minus two. And they missed, so I could ignore the damage, and I didn't have to go back and fiddle with my hit points to add what the damage was, which, like Fantasy Grounds, it's there. And then somebody's got to go back and go, okay, how much did I take? And then add it back in. Mm-hmm. So that was kind of neat. I kind of liked it. And it does definitely speed up, especially when you have eight players all over the battlefield, spells and all these different attacks, to have it automated and just go, yep, accept, take the damage, tells you if you're staggered, tells you if you have a condition. I like that. It has a visual kind of right there going, hey, look, Nick's confused. Look at that icon over his character.
Yeah.
Or, you know, Nigel's staggered, or, oh, Nigel's dead. So, yeah, I like it. I do use it for the Dark Eye system. Can't really compare because it's a different rule set and I'm sure different coders. I'm probably going to try to reach out to Cody going, hey, why don't you work on some Dark Eye stuff? And, you know, as you keep adding stuff, somebody's got to work on it and add all those rules in and make it work smoothly. So,
yeah. Final thoughts on this chance to get to play as a team in someone else's 13th age game.
Cody, if you're listening, thank you. Thank you for inviting us on. It was a lot of fun. I did like the fact that we all had a chance to play all together as players in mm-hmm. somebody's game and engage with each other, you know, as was mentioned on Discord. Just added to that layer, and yeah, it was good. Thank you.
Yeah, definitely. Thanks. It was a lot of fun. A lot of fun.
Yeah, if anybody wants to run a game for us to be players in, like, I would really like to keep playing with these guys and not, you know, having to be on the opposite side of the GM screen.
If you want to see more 13th Age stream games or watch how somebody can use Foundry in a stream game, check out every Monday night on the Pelgrane Press Twitch channel, their Dragon Empire game. So we'll be back in 2 weeks with our Season 5 finale, where we do a wrap up, kind of talk about the whole of Season 5 and what to look forward to in Season 6.
And if you'd like to support the show, you can do so by becoming a patron at patreon.com/iconicpodcast.
Well, you've been listening to the Iconic Podcast.
If you have any questions, comments, or feedback, you can contact us at iconicpodcast@gmail.com or call and leave a voicemail at 720-924-1706.
And be sure to check out iconicpodcast.com for news, updates, and new episodes.
Thanks for listening.